This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Cedarside.com, your all-natural, organic solution to pest control problems, protecting people, pets, and premises. Cedarside.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're continuing our series of clinical focus investigations on various medical conditions and various nutritional issues. And we covered a lot of them, and we continue to march through all medical conditions commonly known to inflict humankind. And among the most prevalent and most bothersome is today's topic, kidney stones. Kidney stones are a serious problem because every year they afflict around 1 million Americans per year. 10% of Americans at one point in their life suffer from kidney stones. Kidney stones usually don't cause serious complications, but they can be excruciating. And they sometimes necessitate surgery, special diets, and medical treatment. And so with that in mind, we're going to talk about conventional therapies. We'll talk about risk factors. We'll talk about prevention. And we will delve into the subject in depth. So a point to be made is that kidney stones have literally plagued humans since the dawn of time. They've even found evidence of kidney stones in a mummy that is 7,000 years old. That doesn't necessarily mean that prehistoric man suffered from kidney stones. Mummies may have been the bodies of royalty who lived high on the hog, who consumed diets that were exceptionally rich in protein or perhaps in refined carbohydrates, even during the time of the Egyptian dynasties. So most of the time, these stones will pass out of the body without causing too many problems. But occasionally, they will be chronic, and this will necessitate some kind of surgical intervention. Typically, patients who suffer from kidney stones have a variety of symptoms. Namely, pain. Pain is a hallmark of passing kidney stones, and the pain may occur in the flanks. The kidneys are actually located in the lower back, so this is often confused with lower back pain. Also, pain may occur in the genital region, in the urethra, or in the male patient, in the penis, as the stone is passed out of the body. And some liken the pain to the pain of childbirth. It's excruciating. So what are some of the symptoms? In addition to pain, there may be blood in the urine caused by the stone scratching tissues as it passes out of the body. The urine can also look a bit cloudy. The individual may experience fever and chills even. Sometimes passage of kidney stones associated with urinary tract infections, so the urine could be cloudy or have an unpleasant smell. There could be burning on urination. The person may even experience nausea and vomiting, which is kind of a reflex of symptom due to the extreme pain. There may be need to urinate more frequently. So renal colic is crampy pain that it's intermittent. It's like, as the smooth muscles of the ureters contract, there is sort of a periodicity to the pain. It's often not chronic. It comes and goes. And so what are some of the risk factors for kidney stones? Well, kidney stones definitely occur more in men than in women by about a 4-to-1 ratio. Not entirely clear why that is the case. Also, folks in hot parts of the world where they get dehydrated have a greater tendency to experience kidney pain. There's a high incidence in the Middle East, for example. There's also a summer predominance of passage of kidney stones. So what predisposes to kidney stones? Well, there's genetic predisposition to forming kidney stones. Some people just stone formers. Having had a kidney stone, by the way, is a risk factor for subsequently making more kidney stones. That's why once you have a kidney stone, it's worth having a workup that we'll talk about in just a few moments. Also, an overactive parathyroid gland, a condition of, called hyperparathyroidism, increases the risk of developing calcium stones because you develop a high level of calcium in the blood, and that calcium is dumped into the urine, and then it precipitates and forms calcium stones. By the way, the two main types of kidney stones are what are called calcium oxalate stones. It's about 85% of stones, and the remaining 15%, usually uric acid stones. And rarely, you can also, and we're not going to talk about the latter two types, cystine stones, which are usually hereditary, and then there are what are called struvite stones, which can occur after people have had a chronic bladder infection. And these are relatively rare, probably less than 1 or 2%. So essentially it's an 85-15 split. So for the most part, we're talking about stones. We're going to talk about, and prevention, we're going to talk about prevention of calcium oxalate stones. So other risk factors, being a man age 30 to 40, younger men seem to be more afflicted. Suffering from a disease or conditions affecting the small intestine. Patients with ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, or patients who've had operations where they have part of their intestine removed, seem to have a more of a problem associated with their conditions. Also, patients who've undergone bariatric surgery, which involves the removal of a section of the intestine, may also have kidney stones. And this has to do with the way that calcium and oxalic acid are reabsorbed in the intestine or deposited. Much of it should pass out, but if it's reabsorbed, it'll go into the urine in a concentrated fashion and cause the stone to precipitate. One way to think of a stone is, you know, if you have a glass of water and you keep adding salt to it, the salt will dissolve for a while, but eventually the salt will precipitate. You'll see the crystals of the salt form, and that means there's a supersaturated solution, and supersaturated urine more likely to cause stones. That's why it's recommended that people who are prone to stones drink a lot of water, hydrate well, and there's some evidence that the type of bacteria that are present in your intestine may have an impact on kidney stone disease. It's very interesting. They're doing some studies which look at the type of bacteria that are present in people who are stone formers versus people who are not stone formers. And one study that is in the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology says that a certain bacteria, Oxalobacter formigenes, may actually reduce the risk of calcium oxalate kidney stones. What they found was that there was about twice the risk of kidney stones in patients who had the right bacteria present. Results suggest that colonization with Oxalobacter formigenes is associated with a 70% reduction in the risk for being a recurrent calcium oxalate stone former. So that actually suggests a strategy. We haven't yet come up with probiotics that are targeted towards stone formers. It may be that diet affects these bacteria, and we can promote the formation of beneficial bacteria through certain dietary strategies rather than simply taking a pill that contains spores or live cultures of the bacteria. But it's interesting that the intestinal milieu, the microbiome, the blend of bacteria or dysbiosis may be associated with incidence of kidney stones. It always seems to come down to what's going on in your gut. There's also risk factors associated with rapid weight loss. Rapid weight loss tends to promote gallstones. For some reason, it tends to promote kidney stones as well. undergoing chemotherapy. Well, chemotherapy sometimes dumps a lot of uric acid into the urine. The breakdown of tissue caused by chemo can increase uric acid, and therefore more likely to form stones. Of course, those who suffer from gout, that would cause uric acid to deposit in the joints, but also would cause uric acid crystals to deposit in the kidneys. So gout sufferers are more likely to have stones. Turns out having only one kidney is also a risk factor. And we'll go through some more risk factors as we proceed through our discussion. The conventional treatment is to give patients strong pain relievers, sometimes really powerful opiate pain relievers, because the pain is excruciating. And often it's just watchful waiting. It's you take x-rays or you take ultrasounds. Typically, an ultrasound will reveal the presence of kidney stones. And if they're small enough, they predict that they will pass. If they are very large, and there are actually some types of kidney stones called staghorn calculi, these are literally shaped like they have jagged edges and they look like, you know, like they got hooks on them. These are hard to pass. And once you have a kidney stone beyond a certain size, it's not likely to pass naturally. And then you have to undergo a treatment to either smash the stones or endoscopic surgery, usually through a small incision in the back. They go in, and with a endoscope, they have a little cage that grabs the stone and pulls it out, and that normally alleviates the problem. The lithotripsy is extracorporeal shockwave therapy. You sit in a sort of a bathtub, and they direct powerful sonic waves at your kidney, and it smashes the stones, and then with some sort of pain reliever, you can simply pass the fragments and get rid of the stone that way without surgery. There's also sometimes some medications that are used to relax the urinary tract and expand the muscles there. These are so-called alpha blocker medications that allow the stone to pass more easily. So other risk factors for stones, chronic diarrhea. You know, diarrhea will dehydrate you. And that's another reason why patients with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, gastrointestinal ailments, may be more at risk, because they literally lose a lot of fluid through their GI tract, become dehydrated. In terms of natural prevention, some studies show that a reduced sodium diet is helpful, because the more sodium you take in, the more calcium you secrete. However, there are other studies that say that there's not too much of a relationship between salt consumption and kidney stones. So it's not ultimately the most reliable indicator of risk. There's another condition which actually, if you saw the series Mad Men, before the development of modern antacids, these type A individuals who were highly stressed and probably drank a lot of booze and smoked cigarettes were very prone to ulcers. This is like a Madison Avenue ailment. You were ad executive and you had an ulcer, and you would keep little bottles of calcium carbonate, which are now referred to as Tums, as an antacid in your drawer, and maybe even a bottle of milk. It was not uncommon for ulcer sufferers to use the milk therapy to coat and soothe their ulcers. And so you take a lot of Tums, you drink a lot of milk, you'd overburden your body with calcium, and also you would alkalinize your body. And this promotes calcium oxalate stones. This is referred to as the milk alkali syndrome, now rather rare as a cause of kidney stones. But in the past, it was routine to see sufferers of milk alkali syndrome in the pre-ulcer medication era. It's before the advent of strong acid blockers like Tagamet and Zantac and Pepcid and now Nexium and Prilosec and so on. Also, there's some debate as to whether the ketogenic diet is a risk factor for kidney stones, because if you eat all meat and very low fiber, like super paleo, and almost no carbohydrates, it's thought that that can somewhat increase your uric acid. And it may also prevent calcium from exiting properly from your body, so that the calcium has to come out not through your digestive tract, but via your urine, and this creates a supersaturated urine. This is a source of debate. Some people who are experts on the paleo diet say that if you've had kidney stones and you've been on a really rigorous paleo diet, maybe you should cool it and introduce maybe 30% carbohydrates. There's also drug-induced urinary calculi. And certain drugs seem to be more likely to cause kidney stones. Diuretics like Lasix may increase the risk of these types of stones. One anti-epileptic medication, which is called Topamax, is associated with kidney stones. And laxatives, too, are associated with kidney stones, because if you have persistent diarrhea due to use of kidney stones, in effect, you'll dehydrate yourself. So, be careful with cleanses that dehydrate you. If you're not properly hydrating, that could be a problem. Also, Cipro, sometimes, literally, it can precipitate in your kidneys. It's highly insoluble, and rarely you can actually get a kidney stone made of Cipro. Sulfa medications like Bactrim may also cause this, and this is troubling because these medications are commonly used to treat urinary tract infections, which are more common in patients who have kidney stones, right? Certain AIDS drugs, one's called Idenovir. These are some of the medications that can be associated with kidney stones. Another risk factor for kidney stones is sugary drinks. According to a study in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, 2013, adults who drink at least one sugar-sweetened drink a day are slightly more likely to develop kidney stones than people who rarely imbibe them. They looked at 159 out of 100,000 people who drank a sugar-sweetened non-cola beverage, such as clear soda, less than once a week developed kidney stones. So keeping it less than once a week appears to be protective, compared to 306 out of every 100,000 who drank soda daily. So you double your risk. They say roughly a 33% greater chance of developing kidney stones. Frequent punch drinkers had an 18% higher chance of developing kidney stones. And so that's a concern. Part of the problem is that sodas contain a lot of fructose. Fructose is a precursor for uric acid. And so this may, in patients who have gout, we recommend not only that they restrict their intake of purines, which are present in meat and certain vegetables or certain plant foods like beans and asparagus, but some of the same measures that are useful for gout, which affects the joints, are important for patients who have uric acid stones. This is one of the reasons why it's important, if at all possible, if you pass a stone, to capture the stone. So you can strain your urine with a common kitchen strainer as a stone is passing and catch it. Alternatively, if you've had a stone and you didn't catch it, you can do a test called a stone risk profile or something along those lines, which shows you whether you're excreting too much uric acid or whether you're excreting too much calcium or too much oxalate. If you're not excreting enough fluid altogether, it'll point out that you're dehydrated. It'll also give you a score on magnesium levels and potassium levels and sodium levels and citrate. You actually want to increase your potassium, your magnesium, and citrate, because those are protective against stones. And we'll talk a little bit about strategies for increasing those momentarily. So when it comes to dietary prevention, it appears that avoiding high levels of oxalate is more important than avoiding lots of calcium. Of course, if you mega dose on calcium, it's a problem. But actually, studies show that individuals who consume a moderate amount of calcium who've had stones before are not generally at much higher risk for kidney stones. But if they consume a lot of oxalate, they are at risk. So reduction in sources of oxalic acid, that's a useful strategy for them to pursue. So what are the high oxalate foods and drinks? Well, it's very easy because there's so many kidney stone sufferers, and the majority of them, 85%, are suffering from calcium oxalate stones. Very easy to find. If you Google high oxalate foods and drinks, you can easily find a list. And you don't have to avoid everything, but you should avoid the ones that are particularly high in oxalate or limit your consumption. And to give you an idea, among the drinks, it turns out that black tea and cocoa and dark beer are particularly high in oxalate. More on the alcohol connection later. Instant coffee, but not regular coffee. Hot chocolate, soy drinks, soy cheese, soy milk, soy yogurt. In terms of nuts and seeds, nuts and nut butters, sesame seeds, tahini, soy nuts. Actually, none of the meats are a problem if you have calcium oxalate stones, but if you have stones that are uric acid, then you may want to limit your meat intake. Dairy and eggs as sources of protein are preferable if you have gout or uric acid kidney stones. In terms of starches, the starches that are particularly high are amaranth, buckwheat, wheat bran, wheat germ, whole wheat bread. It turns out that in this case, white bread is preferable. Whole wheat flour, pretzels. In terms of fruit, blackberries and blueberries, Concord grapes, kiwis, raspberries. Rhubarb is extraordinarily high. You know, I just love that cherry rhubarb pie. But man, that is just not great if you have oxalic acid stones. Among vegetables, beets and beet greens, particularly high. Many varieties of beans are high in oxalate. Celery, collard greens, dandelion greens, a lot of healthy foods. Kale, escarole, leeks, olives, potatoes, rutabaga and spinach. Spinach is particularly high. Swiss chard. These are foods that are high in oxalic acid. By no means this is a complete list. And among the condiments, soy sauce. And then there are the moderate foods that have moderate levels that you can consume in moderation. And so on down the line. So check out, you can check, very easy to find lists of low oxalate foods. What about the role of alcohol? It seems so often I hear stories of some guys are playing softball in the summer. It's a hot day. They bring a six-pack. They're drinking beer. And then, whoa, the guy gets a stabbing pain in his lower back or groin. And lo and behold, they're passing a kidney stone. So it seems as if the beer caused the problem. Actually, it's more likely that the hot weather caused the problem. And alcohol is actually not the greatest way to rehydrate. Ultimately, high levels of alcohol dehydrate you. So if you want to rehydrate after a sports event or on a hot day, don't drink a lot of beer. Alcohol also interferes with the body's ability to excrete uric acid. So if you got uric acid stones, they have cartoons from the 19th century and 18th century in England. And in France, of gout sufferers, and typically they're bon vivants, and they drink a lot of red wine, and they eat a lot of meats. And so alcohol can be part of the problem if you have uric acid stones. But actually, some studies suggest that moderate intake of beer and wine can offer some protection against stone formation. Just don't, drink a six-pack when you're dehydrated. That's not going to work well. So this is part one of our podcast, and in part two, we're going to talk about specific strategies for prevention of kidney stones. We'll talk about various supplements like calcium and vitamin D and vitamin C and B6 and the right and the wrong types of juices to drink. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.